Alright, here's my station. So it's Jonas Kamonic, Ranger VH3KX. This is the flight detector.
Victor Echo 1, Echo Papa with a comment.
And Emil, yeah, you, I think you have some information about Pico balloons. Come on in.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Jim. First of all, I wanted to mention that I'm proud to say that the Canada Hub is now being heard full-time in the city of Halifax, Nova Scotia, on 2 meters. We were able to put that up, and pretty happy about it. Today, I was able to update my QRZ station on the Pico balloons activity. Today, we are monitoring 250 Pico balloons, 70 of which beacon today so far. We had 13 new launches yesterday. Any station wishing to follow and learn more about these Pico balloons, simply drop me an email. Thanks, Jen. I got a call at early night, so thanks for listening. Over.
And Emil, do you want to... Oh, you're welcome, Emil. You're welcome to any time with your information there. And once again, Emil can be found on his QRZ page. You've got all sorts of information there. Give it a look. I think you'll find it interesting. Thanks, Emil. You have a good night. And with that, then, I think we'll hold it here for a few minutes. I'll just go through the very start of the net. Always have a bunch of information about a whole host of different things here. Just very quickly, I'll look through it all. Nothing very entailed. Solar wind, 550 kilometers a second. And that is now showing pretty RHF propagation. We're seeing it's not so great right now. 80 and 40 meters before during the day, fair at night, 30 and 20 comparable day and night, 17, 15, both comparable day and night right now. As of late this afternoon, overhead my location here. And I always use that for a little bit of context. So a lot of stuff out there, more going on. And following those numbers from week to week, you'll see that number globally is going up from week to week now. Asteroids.
Node 51730 connected.
On May 17th today, we had these are near-Earth objects. They're close enough. We need to keep an eye on them, but they're not that close that they're going to be hitting us. We had asteroid 2025 HD17, 7.3 lunar distances away. So that's just the distance the moon is away from us. So 7.3 times that. 9 kilometers a second it's traveling at, and 29 meters in diameter. On the 24th, we have another one here, and I'm not done with this one for tonight. I'm going to give some additional information about that, so hypothetical impact information, what would happen if this one actually hit us. Again, it's not going to, but if it did. This one's coming up March 24th, 2025, 387746, 17.4 lunar distances away, so that's way out there. And 8.3 kilometers a second, and 339 meters in diameter. So I'm hoping to get be able to work that out in the next little while. So that's it for the initial part of the net. And around this time now, I give Tom a shout with his climate update. Before I do, I'll just see if there are any additional check-ins before I give Tom a shout, and I'll give him a call and see what we have in store for the climate update for this evening. So any additional stations you'd like to join us, come on in.
Kilo Charlie 5, Romeo Juliet Lima, Lewis.
Hey Lewis, good to hear you tonight.
WBZ, checking in.
And William WBZ, I have you in as well. And I think we'll stop here for the next little while, and I'll give Tom a call, see if he's ready with a climate update. And Tom, VH3VWX.
Hey, good evening, Ken and all on net. Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the X-ray returning over here. Yeah, I'm good to go. Can I just get a quick audio report, please?
Awesome.
Yeah, you're sounding good.
All right, this is Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the X-ray for ID. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. I'm doing this backwards, good night, depending on where you are across the world, as the world's spinning backwards. My name is Tom Tanglosser Mike, and I'm down the street from Ken here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I just want to apologize on behalf of the Skywide Club. I've been messaging our president, Phil. He has a... We've connected the VE3SKY machine. It's a two-meter machine in the city of Toronto here to the Canada Hub. Unfortunately, the Echolink side of the connection is causing that kerchunk. So if it gets too annoying, just let us know and Phil will drop the connection. Hopefully he'll have it sorted out going forward so that it'll be perfectly quiet. But we're almost there. We're almost there. Okay, let's take a look at the weather this week. We've got a few things on the go. Let me cycle it. So looking at the tropical weather, as we do every week, it's actually very quiet across the tropics. There is literally nothing on the go right now. Nothing significant of note. There are no investigations. There are no tropical systems. There is nothing. Just the usual tropical storms and rainfall, where they usually are at this time of the year, but nothing out of the ordinary. So that's all good. Tropics are very quiet. Can't see the same in other places. It's been very busy. Let me drop it. So this past week, the first place I want to touch on is going to be Manitoba. Manitoba's sort of been in for a wild ride this past week. What happened on the 11th, so that's 6 days ago, May 11th, there was a new record set in Canada for the first, for the earliest 100 Fahrenheit, that's 37.8 Celsius ever recorded. And that occurred in Emerson at 2:55 p.m. local time. And the temperature got up to 37.8 degrees Celsius, that's 100 Fahrenheit. And that beats the previous record, which I believe was May 30th in Manitoba as well. So that came in as the earliest, this past May 11th, as the earliest 100 Fahrenheit ever in Canadian history. So that's very hot, very early. And they've been in for a wild ride. There's the temperatures have since fallen off, and the weather's been absolutely terrible, with temperatures down into the single digit Celsius. And in some parts of Manitoba, it's actually at or below freezing currently, and there's the potential for some light snow. So what goes up must come down. So they went from extreme heat to having quite a cold snap, but it's gonna disappear shortly. But that gets into the next thing, which is the fires. Let me drop it. So they had the very high temperatures this past week. It's cooled off now, but they had almost 6 days of very, very high temperatures, at least for this time of the year. It's very dry. The fire fuel indices are quite high, and that's been problematic. So with the heat, there were some storms and some fires that started. So let me go through those. So this is as of May 17th, which is today. This is the latest data. The big fires that we're watching right now is Lac du Bonnet. That's in Manitoba. That's in the rural municipality of Lac du Bonnet, and that fire has significant attention due to some tragic fatalities. And as of May 16th, it's consumed approximately 3,400 hectares, that's 8,400 acres, and it's still considered out of control. The next big fire is Wendigo Beach Fire, that one's in Manitoba. That's 6 kilometers northeast of the Lac du Bonnet fire, and that fire has a high priority due to the presence of residents and properties in the area. There are evacuation orders that are in effect for Wendigo Road and the adjoining subdivisions, as well as Highway 433 and Cape Coppermine Road. Manitoba Parks has also issued a mandatory evacuation for areas there. The next one is the Ontario-Manitoba Border Fire. That's Ken 020. That's how the fire is identified. That one's located in the community of Ingolf, and this fire is substantial. It's reported to be about 30,986 hectares in size, and it's currently classified as not under control, and it's having some significant community impacts. Let me drop it. The next fire is Kenora 14. That fire has restrictions in effect, and they're trying to, there's ongoing management efforts for that fire. The next one is Fort Francis 4. This one's in Ontario, again. And similar to Kenora 14, that fire has some restrictions in place. And then the Sioux Lookout 3 fire, that's SLK-003 if you want to find an identifier on that one. And that fire has been remapped to approximately 1,849 hectares. And the fire rangers are actively working on suppression efforts for that one and protecting whatever they can protect in the area and, you know, within the community. And the last one of note over here is going to be the Kenora 20 fire, again in Ontario near Kenora. That one's a pretty big one. It has an evacuation order in effect, and it's pretty severe. It's reported to be about 30,986 hectares. So that's what's going on at the moment. Let me drop it. And the reason the Lac du Bonnette, Manitoba fires gathered some attention, unfortunately, is due to two fatalities. There were a man and a woman. They were trapped by the rapidly moving fire, and unfortunately, they perished as a result. Now, the RCMP is conducting an investigation to make sure that there's no foul play. But at this point in time, it's not suspected that there is, so their deaths are at least being preliminarily attributed to the fire that went through the area. And that fire is still ongoing at this point in time. And there's all sorts of, I'm not going to get into the details, but there's all sorts of smoke advisories and things like that due to poor air quality conditions with these fires. That said, the cooler, wetter weather in Manitoba has been helping to dampen the fires and slow the progress, so that's been beneficial. But again, these are large fires, and they're still actively working on them. Oh, this is Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the X-ray at 4ID. And you know it's spring in the Arctic, in the high Arctic anyway, when there's a blizzard. On Thursday, May 15th, there was a pretty big blizzard that blew through Iqaluit. The blizzard started on May 14th, and it continued overnight into the morning of May 15th. There was a big low-pressure system. And the blizzard had winds of 50 to 80 kilometers an hour. I was looking at the airport over there, and it was absolutely howling. Visibility was zero. Temperatures were around minus 7 degrees Celsius. But with the wind being that high, wind chills were in the minus 20s and minus 30s, so very, very cold. And it was actually, this is interesting because for those that don't know, Iqaluit's actually the capital of Nunavut, so it's their capital city, and it's essentially the largest operating city at that northern latitude, so it's up in the high Arctic. And it's surrounded by... It's on an island, but it's surrounded by the Arctic Ocean, so it's generally cold most of the year. Let me go through the impacts here. Let me cycle it. Don't quote me on this. I think it has a population of 8,000 people. I saw 12,000. I think it's 8,000. Anyway, it's somewhere in that ballpark. Let's say 8,000 to 12,000 people. Don't quote me on that. I should have figured out how many people are there. But so the blizzard, it actually. Iqaluit, they announced a complete shutdown of all non-essential city services because of the blizzard. So that was water delivery, sewer services, garbage collection, the municipal offices, and the recreation facilities. All the schools were closed, all the government offices were closed, and there were power outages. There was actually a significant power outage that affected the entire community, and that started at 7:30 a.m. on a Thursday because wind brought down some power lines, but they were able to restore most of the power by about 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time the same day. So the power was out for 6 hours. Now, that might not normally be a problem, but if it's a blizzard and it's minus 7, minus 8 degrees outside, you're going to lose heat if you're using electricity for heat, so that's a bit of a problem. And, of course, there were travel disruptions. And one interesting thing was that airline cargo was delayed. So the blizzard, it basically led to a delay of a ballot box from Nauujjuaq, which was part of the Nunavut election. So that ballot box was delayed because the plane couldn't leave Ranking Inlet. So I don't know if they ever got the ballot in there. I'm sure they did, but that was just an interesting ramification there. So that was it. The blizzard has since eased, and now we get into what will happen in the Arctic is it quickly transitions into a spring-like phase. So you'll get these storms at this time of the year, and then by the end of the month, almost, June 1st, the ice and the snow tend to rapidly, rapidly melt, and summer moves in, and then we don't really get any significant cold air injections by the end of the month. So Manitoba will be mostly spared because of that. And the Arctic will warm up. Let me drop it. It's actually sort of interesting because every now and then I'll talk to people going to Toronto Maple Leafs games or Blue Jays games, and they'll come down from northern communities within Ontario itself, and they'll come down, mid-May, and all the trees and the flowers are out here. Everything's green, right? It's like summer. Whether it feels like it or not, they'll come down. It'll be 20 degrees Celsius, so, 70-something Fahrenheit. And where they've come from, there's maybe not necessarily snow on the ground, but they're in a much earlier spring phase. And if you talk to people that are north of that, let's say they're in northern Quebec, which is even further north, they're like, oh, yeah, we still have snow on the ground and stuff. So it's incredible. You can not leave a province and have, you know, summer and winter juxtaposed against each other. So I always found that interesting. It's a little crazier up in the high Arctic. Okay. Let's talk about some other weather in Canada, Northern Tornadoes Project. There's four tornadoes now. The most recent tornado occurred on May 15th, and that was a tornado over land in, Sperling, S-P-E-R-L-I-N-G, Manitoba. So that was a tornado that occurred on the 15th of May. Let me drop it. Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the extra 4ID. And that was our latest tornado. So we now have four tornadoes in Canada for the year so far. There you go. And they are all across the country. None in Ontario yet, just the one downburst. So we're going to see if that changes. Now, while we might have four tornadoes, the U.S. is raging. It was absolutely bonkers. I'm going to talk about Friday, and then I'll backtrack to Thursday, since both days are pretty busy. There was a dust storm in Chicago. If you can believe that, this was something that stood out for me. This is the third time ever in the National Weather Service Chicago's office's history that they've ever issued a dust storm warning. So they issued it for DeKalb County, King County, DuPage County, Cook County, and what basically happened was there was a thunderstorm racing across central Illinois into northwestern Indiana, and the outflow from that storm, it was just perfectly timed, right? The farmers are plowing, the fields are still barren, there's not a lot of crop cover and or ground cover, and the storm, as it went north, it had an outflow boundary, and it kicked up this big wall of dust with high winds that raced into the suburban and the metropolitan areas of Chicago, and it was like a big dust storm, like what you would see on the plains or in places in the Mideast. Let me drop it. Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the X-ray. So this wall of dust, it basically was in a line extending from Seminook, Illinois, to near Dyer, Indiana, and it was moving north at about 45 miles an hour. And when it moved into these areas, gusts as high as 50 or 55 miles an hour were reported. And, I mean, a dust storm it's not going to kill you if you're standing outside, but it's painful for the eyes and you don't want to breathe in all the dust, but it's really dangerous on the roads. It's obviously dangerous for air travel. That's a separate issue. But the real hazard is if you're in a vehicle, right? Because all of a sudden you lose visibility and you can drive off the road, get into a pileup, that sort of stuff. So that's a big problem. And obviously Illinois and Indiana, these dust storms don't happen there all that often. And the last warnings that I'm aware of were quite a while ago, something like over 4,000 days ago for the last warning. So in the history of Chicago, the National Weather Service in Chicago, they've only had to issue three of these, so that's interesting. So there we go. They had to issue one the other day due to the weather. Let me cycle it. Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the extra 4ID. Okay, so there was a few things here. What am I going here? Just give me a second. I had notes over here. Okay, so on Friday, May 16th, there was a pretty big tornado outbreak outside of the dust storm in Chicago. The key takeaways from this is that there were, as of Saturday, Kentucky, there's at least 18 people that have been reported dead, and officials are indicating that this number is expected to rise. The search and rescue efforts are continuing. The hardest hit area so far is Laurel County, where 17 deaths occurred due to one single tornado moving through there, and there was also an additional death reported in Pulaski County. And in Missouri, at least 7 people have died, including 5 in the city of St. Louis and 2 in Scott County. I was watching some web streams, and there's some good photos. There was actually a fairly strong tornado that moved into Missouri, into St. Louis itself, into the metropolitan, basically downtown. It moved through the city. And that's where these people died, unfortunately. And so 5 were in the city of St. Louis proper, and 2 were in Scott County, which is periphery of the city. And that brings the total confirmed death toll to at least 25. And, of course, there were numerous injuries within St. Louis itself. There were at least 38 people that were reported injured. mainly from collapsing buildings and falling trees, that sort of stuff. And there were also, I don't have an exact number, but there were also injuries reported in Kentucky. Two of our current dogs, Darla and Henry, one's a beagle, one's a coonhound, they came from Kentucky, so my wife says we saved them from the tornado. I guess we did. So outside of that, there was also widespread damage, like I mentioned, Laurel County, Kentucky. Lots of structures damaged over there, Missouri, particularly in St. Louis. There were over 5,000 homes affected. The zoo was hit by it, and part of the Centennial Christian Church, that collapsed, and that's where one of the deaths came from, and over 100,000 customers in St. Louis didn't have power. So really, you know, terrible. Scott County, again, just outside of the metro area, multiple homes were destroyed. And in Illinois, in Marion, a tornado touched down near the Federal Correctional Institution, Marion. And the inmates, if they could see it, they got a good view of that tornado. And in Indiana, in Bloomington, there was a tornado there. It was mainly in a rural area, but it did still manage to affect 75 homes, including a motel, a duplex. And six people were injured as a result of that in Monroe County. And working backwards, the previous day, so this low-pressure system that was responsible for the storms, we have storms here in Ontario today. They warnings are out for strong winds. And that same system produced the tornadoes yesterday and then the day before, so it's going to be Thursday now, May 15th. That same low-pressure system, don't forget it's moving from west to east, I'm going backwards here, that spawned tornadoes in Minnesota. There were at least four tornadoes in Minnesota. One was near Benson, that's in Swift County, and that one touched down around 1:15 in the afternoon. Then there was one in southeast of Morris County, which is in Stevens County, and then there was another one in Melrose, which is in Stearns County, that's about 30 miles northwest of St. Cloud, and there was one near Spring Hill, which is near Melrose, that's in Stearns. That's basically on the Stearns County line. And in Wisconsin, there were a bunch of tornadoes. That's when things really ramped up. There was one near New Richmond, which is in St. Croix, in western Wisconsin, and that one has a preliminary rating of EF2. And the next one is near Roberts, which is also in St. Croix, and then one near Loyal, one near Unity, one near Kolb. So the other three I mentioned are in Clark County. The one near Unity, that was an EF2 tornado. And while these tornadoes did damage multiple homes and businesses, in Dodge County, in Mayville, there was one that was impactful. It actually destroyed part of a large gas line, so it created a large gas leak. And outside of the tornadoes, here's some interesting weather. There was a 4-inch hail report in Altoona. That's in Eau Claire County. And then there was also 2.25-inch hail, so 2.25-inch hail reported in Washington County near Cottage Grove. That's really big as well. That'll still hurt. I mean, 4 inches is huge. That'll really hurt you. But 2.25, that's not good either. And there were some other hail reports, but they're smaller, golf ball and such. And then wind gusts. A lot of 70-plus mile-an-hour wind gusts in many areas. So it was really busy. Whew. This is Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-Ray 4ID. And just a couple things I'm going to blast through over here. Some really, really warm temperatures around the world. Firstly, Iceland, they had a warm spell 3 days ago. They had temperatures getting up to some really high temperatures. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this place, but they got up to a temperature of almost 27 degrees Celsius, which was a new record. Iceland's very small. It's not a big island. They still do have a lot of weather stations on it. And I would say that basically most all of the weather stations are going to have broken some sort of a record, as far as either setting a new high temperature or a high temperature for this early in the year. So it was an incredibly unusual warm spell in Iceland. 24.2 degrees Celsius, for example, in Egilsstaðafjallajökull. I can't pronounce that. I butchered it. Let me drop it. The Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-Ray. And they didn't only have high temperatures. There was a few other things that went on Iceland. They also had some flooding rains and some other stuff. Let me just, I lost my note over here. Give me 1 second. This is Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-Ray 4ID. Oh, no, I had a note over here, and I don't know what I did with it for Iceland. I was looking at the, there was flooding over there, and I was about to go through it, and now I don't know what I did with everything over here. Anyhow, there was a heavy rainfall event, and it was near Seyðisfjörður, I believe that's how you pronounce it, Seyðisfjörður. I'm trying to read Icelandic here. And they had approximately 500 millimeters of rainfall leading to flooding, and they had some storms. So they had really warm temperatures, and they also had some storms associated with it. So that was unusual for Iceland. I had some more details, and I lost that note. I don't know what I did with it over here, so my apologies there. Anyhow, they weren't the only ones that had bad weather. All right. Oh, by the way, this is also apparently the biggest week for bird migration. I read that somewhere. But I'm not a birding expert. In other parts of the world, Australia, they just had some fog, and it was cold and wet in Melbourne. And not too exciting over there. The most exciting weather I could find was that they had light snow that fell on the highest peaks of the mainland in Tasmania. And temperatures there got as low as -7 degrees Celsius. So, you know, winter's on its way over there. And that occurred on Friday, May 16th. New Zealand had a little bit more active weather. Now, they had some really strong winds of almost 100 kilometers an hour in the higher elevations. There's a cold front blowing through, and obviously they're transitioning into their more winter-like weather. And that was what was going on over there, so some really strong northwest gales affecting areas like Canterbury and other places in New Zealand, Marlborough, etc. And in other places, here it is. Iceland, they had 550 millimeters of rainfall, and the entire town had to be evacuated, and there were landslides, and that occurred on Friday, May 16th, so that occurred yesterday. Man, there's been so much weather. Eastern Europe and the Balkans, they've had an Arctic outbreak, so that moved through there, and that actually brought a high risk of damaging frost to the blooming trees, and that was a good, that's a big concern because that'll damage apple crops, things like that. And nothing else really too exciting for the UK. Continental Europe, there are some concerns now that they're going to have a drought because it's been very dry, and that's persisting later into May. And there were just some storms that had to produce some localized severe weather in parts of southern and southeastern Europe. And lastly, Africa, they were a little busy. They had some really heavy rainfalls in Somalia with totals of about 1 to 300 millimeters, and that led to flash flooding in Mogadishu. And there were casualties reported. I don't know how many. Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, they also had some heavy rainfalls, as did Kenya and Uganda. They saw between 70 and 150 millimeters of rainfall. And now that's not unusual this time of the year, since they're transitioning into a wetter period in East Africa. And that's actually been good, aside from the flash flooding, in that it's reduced seasonal deficits for lack of rainfall. So the drought condition has improved greatly. And South America, they've been pretty good. The main thing that was interesting to me is Argentina and Chile, they've been getting some cooler air, sort of, don't forget the cold dome was expanding in the southern hemisphere, so the Andes and stuff, they've been getting some more snows at lower elevations within the higher elevations, if that makes sense. And the dry season's begun down there. May is typically within the dry season for parts of South America, like the Amazon rainforest. So Machu Picchu, for example, they'll be dry for the next while. If you go during their summer, you're going to get swamped. If you go during this season, you know, it's May, this is the dry season, so Machu Picchu is great. You're not going to get rained on. So that's about it as far as active weather goes. I think I've covered everything. All right, I'll let Ken do some check-ins. There were some more extreme temperatures. I'm not going to bore everybody with that. This week I was going to discuss, I had a whole bunch of stuff, some weather oddities, and I was also going to discuss the weather on Pluto. That's going to take way too much time from the Science Net. Instead, I'm just going to talk about, the weather on Jupiter. Instead, I'm just going to talk about the atmosphere of Pluto, since I think that was interesting, and that's one of the more recent planets that we've discovered and we've been starting to learn about. But until let Ken do some check-ins, and we'll get back to that. This is Victor Alpha 3 Victor Whiskey X-ray. We'll send it back to Ken for check-ins, comments, questions. This is VA3VWX over to VA3KEX.
It is VA3KEX. Ken here, and listening to the, you're listening to the Science and Tech Net. And any stations out there, if you'd like to join us, come on in. And if you have any comments or questions for Tom, come on in with those as well.
King Kong 6, Robert Queen, Clear Lake, Iowa. Bob in Clear Lake, Iowa.
And Bob, I've got you there. Checking in, or did you have a comment for Tom as well?
Checking on only.
Got you in. Any additional stations? Come on in.
Kilo 8, Charlie, Papa Charlie. Kilo 8, Charlie, Papa Charlie. We're just going to check in.
Victor Echo 3, Zulu Victor X-ray. Tim here, Scarborough, just checking in.
November 2, Papa Bravo Foxtrot, Dale in Palm Bay, Florida. No traffic.
And that station was in N2P BPF, and Tim, I had you in there as well, VE3ZBF.
Yeah, and this one, Corey?
And that station, come in once again for me, please.
Kilo Echo 2 Foxtrot Yankee Yankee monitoring.
And Foxtrot Yankee Yankee, yep, I've got you checked in. I've got you checked in from earlier.
NVK 3 HJQ, good morning from down under.
Maybe the station with the really loud, annoying squelch could fix it.
And John, I've got you as well. Good to hear you tonight.
Kilo, Juliet, 5, Juliet, Victor, Victor, Mark in Tulsa, Oklahoma, checking in.
KJ5, JVB, got you check in. All right, well, I think that does it for the time being. And Tom, I guess back to you for now.
Okay, QSL, thanks for that. This is Victor Alpha 3, Victor with the X-ray. I'm going to quickly continue on with the weather on Pluto, and then that'll be it. All right, so... Pluto, New Horizons flew by in 2015, and that was the first time we actually got to see what the Pluto looked like, and we were able to basically use some spectrometry on the atmosphere to figure out what it may be made of, its composition, etc. And while the flyby was brief, it did give us some time to image the planet approaching it as the probe flew by, and then from behind where it was backlit by the sun, and that was actually really important because it gave us an idea of what was going on with the atmosphere. So let's discuss what we know about Pluto. Let me drop it. So Pluto's atmospheric composition structure is interesting. It has a very thin atmosphere composed mainly of nitrogen, that's N2, with smaller amounts of methane, CH4, and carbon monoxide, CO2. I'm sure everybody's familiar with all those gases. And the atmosphere has a layered haze that extends surprisingly high, up to hundreds of kilometers above the surface. And this haze scatters sunlight, giving Pluto its bluish tint. So while Pluto is actually sort of orangey in color as far as the surface material goes, the atmosphere has this bluish tint to it because of that. And unlike Earth, Pluto's atmosphere is a temperature inversion, meaning the upper atmosphere is significantly warmer than the surface due to methane absorbing solar radiation. That's where all that methane is sitting much higher up in the atmosphere. And there's even evidence of a very thin tropospheric boundary layer near the surface, above which the temperature increases rapidly with altitude into the stratosphere. So the troposphere is the layer nearest the surface of the planet, and the stratosphere is the next layer above. On Earth, we have a troposphere, stratosphere, mesosphere, and then you get into the ionosphere, the exosphere, the thermosphere, depending on how you look at it, so the outer parts of it where it slowly blends into space. Pluto, it actually has a much taller atmosphere because there's less gravity and it's a substantially less dense, but we'll get into that in a minute. Let me cycle it. So Pluto has a highly elliptical orbit and a large axial tilt. It's actually about 120 degrees. Earth, 23, 24 degrees. Venus is like 3 degrees. Mars is a little more, approaching 25 degrees, as we discussed. So Mars is more similar to the Earth as far as the tilt goes. But Pluto's way out there, 120 degrees. And because of this, you get extreme seasonal variations over 240-year Earth or Earth year equivalent orbit. So it takes 248 Earth years for Pluto to make one orbit around the Sun. And of course, as Pluto, because it has a super highly elliptical orbit, as Pluto moves closer to the Sun, the surface ice warms and sublimates. So sublimation is, of course, when a solid turns directly into a gas, and this causes the atmosphere to thicken, and when it moves further away, the atmosphere cools, and some of the gas freezes back onto the surface through deposition, right? So you have sublimation, deposition. Those are the two main forces that we see going on the surface of the planet. And, of course, because of this, because of the cycle that we have going on, we likely have significant changes in atmospheric pressure and potentially different weather phenomena over much longer timescales. Now, despite the atmosphere being quite thin, and actually, let me just give you a comparison. So for Earth, the density of Earth's atmosphere at sea level is about 1.2 kilograms per meter cubed. So it's one atmosphere. Mars is roughly 1% of Earth's atmosphere. It's only 0.02 kilograms per meter cubed. Pluto is an extremely tenuous atmosphere with a surface pressure of around 1 pascal. That's 1 PA. So that's basically a super, super thin atmosphere. It only has a few, the density is only a few micrograms per cubic meter cubed, which is basically a million times less dense than Earth's atmosphere at sea level, and significantly less dense than Mars' atmosphere, which is super thin. The only thing that has less of an atmosphere, relatively speaking, would be the Moon. The Moon has essentially what's considered an exosphere rather than a true atmosphere. So the density is incredibly low. The estimates range from about 100 to a few hundred molecules per cubic centimeter. So it's about 20 orders of magnitude less dense than Earth's atmosphere at sea level. So it's practically a vacuum. So Pluto's, it's not as, the density isn't as non-existent as the Moon, but it's way less existent than what you get with Mars, and certainly it's nothing like Earth. So despite that really thin atmosphere, because of the presence of haze that we spoke about, and this was revealed as New Horizons flew past the, as it was leaving Pluto and looking back towards the planet, the presence of this multi